Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey folks, Zach Osmer here, Angling Center, Indianapolis Star. This is Mind Your Banners for Monday, March 11th, 2024. I'm speaking a little softly today, one, because I'm still getting my voice back from a cold, two, because my two-year-old is napping on the other side of the wall. With me, as always, is Mike Neinslick. I don't think he's got a two-year-old napping on the other side of the wall, but he looks like maybe he could use a nap himself, having just yawned, surely flogging himself to the wonderful nightlife of Minneapolis these last few days. Mike, how are we doing?
I'm good. How are you, Zach?
I could do without the congestion in my chest, but other than that, talking about, I guess, sort of a little bit of a recap of the last week or so of IU men's basketball. You know, we did a postseason preview for the women. It won't be as detailed for obvious reasons, but we'll do a bit of a postseason preview for the men. But I guess, first of all, I think last time we talked was, what, Thursday, after everything came down around Woodson being confirmed as staying, and then Indiana beat Minnesota, and then Indiana, of course, lost Liam McNeely. And Indiana came home Sunday and had, I would say, by all accounts, a fascinating day with Senior Day. They beat Michigan State 65-64. They lost Trey Galloway to, I think it's probably fair to say, an apparent aggravation of a previous injury, though Galloway suggested he'll be healthy for the postseason. They had Trent Sisley and Braylon Mullins, probably their two most important recruits in the 2025 class, courtside. They got word from Anthony Leal and Trey Galloway that both players would be back for their COVID-allowed fifth years next year. Leal told Indiana fans to, quote, chill out. And then it's fair to say that Mike Woodson made his own particular sort of opinions at this moment in time clear when he said, I'm the coach, and he talked a lot about true fans. So I guess, you know, Mike, you watched from afar. What was it like? What was the Indiana basketball experience from Sunday, March 10th, 2024, like from 10,000 feet?
Well, Anthony Walker gave by far the most emotional speech there was. He just said thanks. it was good theater. I think now we know why Mike Woodson said, I mean, Mike Woodson received some criticism for why he didn't know if, you know, Trey and Anthony Leal were going through Senior Day, and I think that, you know, they were trying to set this up to sort of have an impact and give them a chance to sort of have their moment. I thought that all made for you know, it was powerful in terms of the fans are excited, and, you know, it was all unfolded. It was dramatic. And then, you know, Mike Woodson gets on there and works blue, very live mic. But that was certainly, you know, and then you got to combine it too with that in the post game. Again, he declined to sort of talk about the topics that he shouldn't have to, that he's done enough, and that topic
that we should say he did talk about, just not with the media.
That's what I'm saying. Like, in the
post, he talked about them unprompted with the fan base. He did not, when prompted, talk about them with the media.
In the press conference, he gave sort of a similar answer he gave at Wednesday in Minnesota about how that's not a fair sort of question. You know, we talked about his messaging a lot on Friday. I don't know that this is the best way to go about it, because, you know, you're picking a fight with the fans, you better win next year, right? Or a group of the fandom. And I think that's a tricky sort of road to go down, right?
Sorry, I was reaching for my mute button there. No, I think that's fair. I mean, listen, it's... everything about this is just a little weird. Like, if you think about just like the last 8 days or 9 days, you know, Indiana comes from behind 16 points to beat Maryland. in a game that I think ultimately it does feel a little bit like if Indiana loses that game this season, probably just sort of peters out. Then there's this groundswell of speculation that Woodson might be removed, retired, or whatever. Even going so far as to, like, there were accounts on Twitter that would have you believe that Indiana had basically already agreed, like, a contract with his replacement, all but on paper. Then on Wednesday evening, news breaks that Woodson will be returning for next season, which I don't think should have been that surprising to anyone, all things considered. Indiana goes away to Minnesota and probably puts in its best win of the season. That's not saying a ton. I get that, but it's still probably Indiana's best overall performance of the season. And it seems like things are pointing in a good direction. Then the next night, Leon McNeely decommits. Then there's all the furor that you mentioned, which felt a little bit manufactured, or if not manufactured, maybe sort of a product of its environment. Around the Galloway and Leal stuff, where I think you're right. I think there's just kind of a level of, like, oh, I'm going to give them their moment. Like, I'm not going to spoil that. I'm not going to hint at it. I'm not, you know. That undeniably sort of follows everything into the weekend and probably deepens this sort of concern that everybody's going to leave. The whole roster is going to transfer. Indiana's going to start from zero first or whatever. And then Indiana, you know, I think deservedly beats Michigan State, particularly, and we'll talk about this game specifically in a little bit, but, like, having to work out, you know, kind of what to do without Trey Galloway in that game, I think was very difficult for Indiana. I think they did, to their credit. And then after the game, you know, Leal and Galloway announce what they announce. Leal says what he says. Woodson says what he says. And it's just, and then you get to Monday morning, and I revisited my in something I filed today for tomorrow, all our preseason media picks. And there were three teams that the media picked in the spot where they finished the Big Ten. If you take basically seeding as final position in the Big Ten, Purdue number one, Wisconsin number five, and Indiana number six. And I recognize that Indiana's journey to the number six seed in the Big Ten tournament was a pretty odd one in some respects. But if I told you in the preseason that Indiana would be 18-13 and 10-10 in the league and finish sixth in the conference, you would have said, I mean, given what they lost and how much they turned over and what they returned, like, that's not a totally unreasonable projection. It's probably a little disappointing, but it's not totally unreasonable. It just feels like we have visited kind of both extremes of sort of the emotional spectrum for IU fans in the last, you know, 9 days, and then just wound up back in the middle, which is basically just Indiana more or less met expectations.
Yeah, and I mean, I think the time, you know, what the administration was trying to do is cut the speculation off, and I get what they're trying to do, and the season was like one game away, like you said, from sort of like an abject disaster, you know, in terms of, like,
at least Xavier Johnson, like, literally said, like, 2 weeks ago, if we get hit in the face, we probably don't get back up. But today,
yeah, I mean, we do. Like, if they had lost all four of these games, like, that's fair, right? To say, like, well, we're bringing them back, we got to say something, you know, whatever. And so, but they did it after two wins, I think, after a win to try to thread the needle with the timing so they don't have to do it after a loss or before senior day. And so, I mean, I get why they did what they did. I don't think it was necessarily the wrong move. And I get the criticism of Woodson. I mean, Cameo. I get that. I mean, I don't think Mike Woodson's immune from criticism this season. And it feels like it went way too far, maybe, and in some corners. And maybe that's why he's talking about true fans. But I find it strange, just kind of with his experience being in the NBA, how he's sort of, maybe because of his alma mater, that he's sort of, I don't know, he's taking it to a personal level, I feel like.
I think the NBA thing actually is an interesting thread because, like, for example, you know, I mean, Indiana's nowhere near the tournament bubble right now, which, if I gave you some of Indiana's metrics, you know, I think they have 8 quad 1 and 2 wins. They have a KenPom strength of schedule of 15. You know, they have the same record as Michigan State, which is a team that a lot of people assume is probably safely in the tournament no matter what happens this week in Minneapolis. I'm not totally sure I agree with that, but I think they're, you know, they're in much better shape than Indiana. You know, Indiana's got I'm just looking at it right now. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 KenPom top 100 wins. It's got 4 true road wins in conference play, including 3 against teams that are KenPom top 75 or better. Like, there are parts of Indiana's theoretical resume that make perfect sense for a bubble team, and they're nowhere near. And the reason they're nowhere near is because the metrics hate them. Computers hate them. And the reason the computers hate them, if you look at their, you know, particularly at their efficiency numbers, is when they win close. When they lose big. Too many of the games where they could inflate their efficiency numbers, and this is kind of coming to the mainstream because that really good piece, I don't know if you saw it, that Scott Van Pelt did about the Big 12 a couple weeks ago. Basically, the Big 12 made this concerted effort for everybody to like run up scores and play empty calorie games in the non-conference and inflate their net numbers so that by the time everybody got the Big 12 play, like everybody's net ranking would be such that so many of your games would be quad one and two wins that everyone would just pick up a bunch of quality wins and most of your losses wouldn't hurt, essentially. And that's why the Big 12s wound up with, you know, 9, 10, whatever teams in the tournament field as of now. You know, Indiana only beat Florida Gulf Coast by 6, only beat Army by 8, only beat Wright State by 9, only beat Morehead State by 1, and so on. And the point is, that stuff matters in college. Win-loss record is not the only thing that matters in college, the way that it is in the NBA. In the NBA, there is an extent to which it's just like, well, listen, you know, finish over this benchmark. You make the playoffs, and then you can kind of start over from there. And you can just kind of, you know, work the matchups according to what you have. But in college, you are a little bit beholden to some of these metrics, and you are a little bit required. I think about a game like Minnesota at home, when Indiana's up, you know, I think at one point in that game, Indiana's up 41 points, and that's 12 and a half minutes left in the second half. That's not, you know, just some first half surge. And then Indiana, I've seen Woodson do this before, kind of takes its foot off the gas, and Minnesota winds up eating back into that deficit, and they still only lose by 12, but there's a difference in the computer's evaluation between 12 and 20 in a game like that. And I'm using this as a placeholder. I'm using it as an example sort of from a different angle, but I do wonder sometimes if like there's an extent to which Woodson still does think in more of an NBA way about the KPIs of his job, you know, essentially. Then, I mean, I'm sure some of it is, you know, his passion for Indiana, his love for Indiana, his feeling that maybe he's got a little bit more right to clap back at times than the average coach would. And maybe he does. I mean, like there's at least some vouch for that, right? Like the guy is a program legend. He's one of the best players the program's ever produced, one of the most beloved players the program's ever produced. And to his credit, these first 3 years have not been, you know, outstanding. But like, let's also not be fair. They've not been terrible. If you look at his first 3 seasons here, you know, he's 62-39. He's ever so slightly, but he's above water in conference play. He's got 2 top half finishes in 3 years. It could be a lot worse, I guess, is my point. And
yeah, and I don't disagree.
I think it all just, I just feel like it all is a little bit more of kind of like, I come from the NBA, and in the NBA, this stands as essentially me meeting my minimum requirements.
Yes, but also, I mean, I would say that he set himself the expectations higher than that, but also, I do think there, you know, I think he's missing the part of the job that you have to talk to the fan base and the recruits and sort of be the spokesperson for the program. And I think this is what some football coaches struggle with, that they just think, well, that's not my job. That's not what I have to do. I got to worry about football, and that's all I got to do. And I think the criticism kind of expands when the fact that they don't have any recruits for next year, and sort of the recruiting strategy going back to last season with leaving a roster spot open when injuries actually played a significant role in the season. They could have used another guard, you know, really quite a bit at multiple times this season, multiple long stretches, that you could sort of say, here's why I did what I did, or here's where maybe I made a misstep. You know, I don't have as much of a problem. I know some people shudder when he sort of criticized, like, Malik was terrible or Trey was terrible. I mean, that doesn't bother me because I think he's trying to hold people accountable, and that's kind of his plain speak, and I think that is fine because I think he's equally willing to dole out praise when Khalil Ware, for instance, dominates on Sunday. But I do think his sort of approach to sort of I'm immune from criticism or above criticism, and then saying true fans is not going to make his road any easier. I just don't. And I get his frustration, but I also think that he's sort of contributed to maybe some of the hysteria.
I think that's fair. No, I don't think that's unfair at all. And I think, if anything, I wrote this last night. There's almost an extent to which I think Indiana, if this is going to be the play, like if this is going to be the attitude, then you kind of just need to lean into it. Like
I
you
mean,
just you.
he's turning full heel in front of our eyes. Like this
Well,
is like
but I'm
not
thinking about
happening.
Anthony Leal too, and like there's, I mean there's arguably no person in that program that's actually got more of a right to tell fans to chill out than Anthony Leal. Like, he's from Bloomington. He's played in Indiana for 4 years. He's not paid like a coach. There's always an extent to which fairly or not, and I understand the NILs change the way people feel about these players a little bit, but fairly or not, there's always an extent to which we look at these million-dollar figures the coaches get and say, well, that's, the old Mad Men line. That's what the money is for. Like, if you're going to get paid $5 million a year, like $3.5 million of that is basically just putting up with all of the headache and frustration and hysteria that can come out of it. Players still, even if you're making some NIL money, shouldn't be necessarily kind of subject to that. And then there's also the element too of, I think, when, and I've been one of them, to be like, I'll be very upfront, when people who are neutral observers, media members, whatever, say like, hey, this isn't very healthy. Like they're, I mean, Greg Doyle had a column last week, that I thought actually used a very apt metaphor, which was, Indiana fans can be like a nuclear reactor when they're harnessed properly. They can power cities, that their power can, run just whatever can just has immeasurable sort of capacity. When they're mismanaged and meltdown happens, they can destroy everything, within like a 2 mile radius or whatever. And when people, when people like me or Greg say, that the fan base's sort of tendency toward panic or, toward assuming the worst does create problems at times. It does create an environment where sometimes it's harder to recruit or it's harder to keep guys or whatever. One of the, fairly consistent, I would say, responses I get is, I don't think the kids hear that at the level that you think they do. Well, here's a player pretty directly telling you they hear it. Here's
Well,
a
and
player
I,
pretty direct.
yeah.
My point is, I understand what you're saying about Woodson, and ultimately Woodson is the constant here. He's the coach. Players will come and go, and coaches are older. They're expected to be a little bit more, sort of circumspect and whatever. But like, if you've got a player saying it too, like there's almost an extent to which it's like, well, then just lean into this. And just like, don't try to be diplomatic about it anymore. Just lean into it and make that part of your whole thing is like, you need to calm out. You're to use Anthony Little's words, you need to chill out and we're going to chill you out. I mean, I don't know exactly how
Oh
to do
yeah,
that,
and
but
I don't
like,
necessarily. And my thing wasn't that I don't think I love it, right? Like I think that's a way to do it, right? And fun and makes it interesting, certainly unique. I'm just saying it's going to make the path that much harder for Mike Woodson. That's not sort of like you could. I don't have begrudge the players criticizing anybody or using their platform. I mean, I think that's what we've seen now. This is the era of athlete empowerment, and so if they want to sort of call fans and be the spokesperson for Mike Woodson that he is not. Yeah, I mean that's fine. I just think it's going to make it that is going to curdle a part of a fan base that's already sort of past him, like that he's going to sort of turn against him and make things more difficult. And to your point, I do think part of what Anthony Leal was speaking to and a lot of the sort of frustration I think from the program side is that they haven't talked about it yet, but there was a push with fans like talking directly to Liam McNeely on social media and doing that kind of stuff, and who knows how much of an impact that has. But I do think that's part of what that they're referring to, that kind of needs to that's a That's a bridge too far. Like, what does he have to do with their struggles this season, and why would you sort of try to do that? Is what I took it as, and then defense of the coach. But so yeah, I don't disagree with it. I think they should lean into it. I'm fine with that. I think that's like I said, it will make for an interesting postseason here. But at the same time, it's not going to make his sort of next 6 months, especially when you consider that, like I said, he's going to be rebuilding the roster in such a significant way.
We'll leave most of the rebuilding talk for the offseason because Lord knows we'll have enough time for that.
Yeah,
Let's
that wasn't to set that up.
talk
Yeah, go ahead.
briefly about the Michigan State game. Anybody who was watching me tweet during the game will know this because I hammered this point over and over again. I cannot think of a better advertisement for how important Trey Galloway has become than this game. He's in the game for about the first 6.5 minutes. He's wearing a sleeve on his knee. Indiana starts on a 20-5 run. He leaves the game. The score is 20-5. Indiana's lead actually crests 24-7, so 17 points. And then from 24-7 through until Michigan State's high water mark, which is at the 9:48 mark of the second half, Indiana only scores, and I think about 20, I want to say about 22 minutes. Indiana only scores 22 points. And actually, the defense isn't terrible, although Indiana kind of loses touch with Tyson Walker in particular. And that's kind of the thing with Michigan State is like that a lot else hasn't gone right for them. But Tyson Walker is still just an elite shot maker. And so if you lose him in their offense or you just don't get tight enough to him defensively, he'll still get comfortable and he'll have a run where he scores 10 points in 5 minutes or whatever. But offensively, Indiana just looked completely bogged down. You know, Xavier Johnson, I think, had to find his way through the game. I think you could really tangibly see how much of the ball screen offense had been built around Trey Galloway and Khalil Ware, because that was Xavier Johnson's bread and butter with Trace Jackson Davis, was high ball screens and just ball screen offense. And it just looked like he wasn't comfortable in it. And you felt like it was like he was running somebody else's offense for the first time in his Indiana career in a weird way, if that makes sense, because it had been bent toward a different guard. I thought Indiana got a little bit sort of jumper happy at times, particularly McKenzie and Bakko. And in fairness, I thought Michigan State tightened some things up defensively, particularly along the perimeter. But then Indiana kind of gets to this place where, you know, they get down what again, I think it was 53-46, if I'm not mistaken. And then Mbako and Johnson hit a couple threes to kind of get momentum turned back in the other direction. And Indiana just defended it for its life. In the last 9:48, Michigan State scored 9 points. And we have not seen this team, particularly without Galloway, who's one of its most important on-ball defenders, defend at that level against an NCAA tournament caliber team really all season. In terms of just saying for basically a stretch of almost an entire quarter of the game, you're not even going to get 10 points. And that's what gets this thing done for Indiana.
Do you want the news that Kirk Cousins has officially signed with the Falcons live on the
Is that
podcast? 4-year deal. Reaction?
is it really official? All right. Well, I mean, he's an adult, so I'm tired.
Anguish. Anguish.
It's not anguish because he's better than any quarterback they've had for the last. I mean, he's even better than probably whatever the end of Matt Ryan's career was. And they have everything else. That's the thing about the Falcons. They have everything else. They have a good offensive, not a great one, but a good offensive line. They've got, you know, two top tier sort of receiving targets as long as Kyle Pitts is fully healthy again. And then they've got two great running backs. It just feels like whatever. You know, it's go Falcons, I guess.
Did you
Just
want a
answer my
rookie?
question about
Did
Michigan State.
you want a rookie quarterback? Is
No.
that
Well, that's
what,
the
I
thing
mean,
is there's they weren't I don't think there was any realistic way for them to get up into the top five to
what
get,
did you?
you know, I mean, I'm not totally there with Drake May. I am there with Caleb Williams. I'm actually broadly there with Jaden Daniels, but I don't think there was any chance that we're going to get Daniels. I don't think
I
Daniels
gotcha.
was, you know, a realistic option. So, I mean, whatever, you know, let's bring it on. Let's do it. What number is he
I
wearing?
derailed it. I derailed it.
I'm just going to
I
paint.
derailed
I'm going to paint his number on my
it.
chest. I don't even know what
Cousins.
number he's going to wear.
Cousins.
They need to get rid of the jerseys. If you know what, if they go back to normal adult jerseys and not the XFL2 stuff they've been wearing the last 5 years,
All
then I'm all in.
right, then you're
Then,
all in.
get me on that bus to the Super Bowl, wherever it is. I'm sure we'll lose it somehow. Anyway, Michigan State, go.
It was just what about the game? I missed the last part of the question. I was anticipating making you sad.
Was just
So
that
sorry.
wrapped up, like the
Yeah.
Michigan State alum you are.
Yeah.
No, particularly the way I thought Indiana defended down the stretch. Again, 9 points in the last 9:48. They allow, they get a hold of Tyson Walker. I think he scored four of those 9 points. I thought Indiana kind of figured some things out offensively, obviously made some big shots. And weirdly, for a team that shot 16 of 27 from the free throw line, or wait, no, sorry, that's a different game. I'm looking at the wrong one. For a team that shot 5 of 12 at the free throw line, was just even worse. Actually made a couple important free throws at the end, not least Khalil Ware's game winner. But I just thought that, whatever Michigan State's shortcomings, I don't know that we've seen Indiana defend that well for that long of a stretch against an NCAA tournament caliber team this season.
Well, I don't remember what the timing was, but they were down seven at one point after leading. In the second, after leading by all that much in the second half, and they sort of steadied themselves without Galloway. They turned the ball over a bunch. But I thought that was the sort of best sort of, I mean, maybe Ohio State, obviously they came back for more, but just in terms of not letting the game get away from them after they sort of had that gut punch, was really impressive. And I think Xavier Johnson talked about just in the last couple of weeks, they've just been a different team. And once again, that showed that they just sort of found whatever they needed to find to kind of get across the finish line. And I think we should talk, Khalil Ware. I think he was 14 of the 16 points they had coming out of halftime. And then he assisted on the other basket. He finished with 28 points. Was really, the strategy for probably about 11 minutes in the second half was just pass it to him in the post and see what he could do and kind of get it done. Tom Izzo, who also talked about Mike Woodson, was very complimentary of Khalil Ware because they had played Oregon a year ago and said that he wasn't even though that was one of his better games, wasn't very good, wasn't very strong. And this was a different, he ate them alive on Sunday. I think that was sort of the difference, and obviously his draft stock just keeps kind of going up and up and up.
Where was, I mean, it is, you're right, his draft stock does keep going up, and I'm about to cough. He is on a particularly dominant streak. I think it's 90 points in his last four games. And that's with one of them being, he didn't score for an entire half of Maryland. He has found it's almost like a lot. He's doing a lot of what he was doing earlier in the season, and then some of the stuff he was trying, particularly the mid-range stuff, the turnaround stuff, going with both hands, is starting to work a lot better. And it just feels like increasingly, he is just sort of like the sort of player that probably we thought, not we, but like we in the most general sense thought he would be last year at Oregon. And I think, I think was or. But what's I think Izzo referred to, he's added some weight, which as we've discussed, I think has been a big piece for him. But I think there's also been a greater understanding for him of just how dominant he can be. And, I mean, even, I think he had 17 and 14 when Indiana beat Minnesota at home. But there were still some moments in that game where I thought Ferrell Payne gave him some trouble. And this is going back to January 12th. Payne finishes with 17 points and 10 rebounds of his own in that game. I couldn't tell you anything Ferrell Payne did in that win at Minnesota, or the one in Minneapolis last week,
Yeah.
Khalil Ware goes for 26 and 11. There's just it just feels like there's a level of separation between what he was even a month or two ago and what he's become. And if there's, I think if there is a path for any kind of optimism for Indiana in the Big Ten tournament this weekend, I think a lot of it goes through having a guy who suddenly looks, for all the world, like a genuinely unstoppable big man. Now, you're probably going to have to play Penn State. We'll talk a little bit, just a little bit about the draw here in a minute. You're probably going to have to play Penn State, obviously, which, has been a problem for Indiana with their disruptiveness in the backcourt and everything. And then after that, who do they get after that? Nebraska.
Yeah,
so you know
who they've really struggled with again.
Two not great matchups for them defensively. If you can find a way to counter that with, you know, more of what we've seen so far from Khalil Ware these last however many games, then maybe you have a chance to spring a couple upsets in Minneapolis. It's almost kind of, I guess, gone underappreciated in the sense that, like, he came in and he met sort of like a minimum expectation of, hey, you were a top 10 recruit. You were meant to be an NBA draft pick. You obviously didn't look anything like that at Oregon. And then he came in and he averaged like 13 and 8, and he made some threes and he was good around the rim. And you thought, okay, yes, like that's much more what we thought Khalil Ware would be, essentially. And then so you almost kind of like filed him away because you were so preoccupied with, can Indiana find a way to get McKenzie Mbako going? And what does Indiana do without Xavier Johnson? And will Indiana ever find legitimate three-point threats and so on? And so I don't know that it's fully appreciated, like, how much better he's been lately, because it was almost like everyone felt like the Khalil Ware box for this team was ticked. But he's actually gone up a level, if not two, at both ends of the floor that I think has given Indiana a dynamic that has led to, as much as anything, in terms of individual performances, four-game win streak.
Well, Izzo talked about that too, that he's not just improved from last year, but from the first 2 months of the season, that he's made substantial improvements in both. I mean, it's a, you know, part of what's a shame is that, you know, really, we talked about his NBA prospects, I think last on Friday, that if he did come back, you know, pick to win player of the year, maybe, you know, in terms of, like, you know, he would be up there. And it speaks to the development, right? Like, that's, and something Mike Woodson's talked about, like, they've played a role in that as well and sort of helped build him up. And, you know, they might necessarily, you know, if they make a tournament run, they'll bear the fruits of that labor. But next year, they really would if he wasn't probably going to go to the draft. But, you know, he has made just, you know, leaps and bounds at every stage of this season, you know, kind of kept going. And it's been impressive.
It is hard, as we've discussed, for me to imagine coming back. Now, it's worth dropping in here. There have been a lot of numbers thrown around. So I was told in one corner last night that Indiana would have unlimited NIL money to rebuild the roster, which is fun to think about. You know, just having like a $200 million college basketball roster. But we would start doing the European.
They signed Kirk Cousins. They were the.
We'd start doing the European soccer thing where we talk about how much they make a week rather than how much they make a year. Like, I'm talking about, he makes £50,000 a week. Why are you paying him in pounds? Don't ask. But I do think Indiana is going to have significantly more. I mean, I think Indiana was already in a really competitive place with NIL in terms of, particularly in the Big Ten. I think we're talking about Indiana moving into the top 10, if not the top 5 nationally in NIL resources this offseason in terms of being able to go out and get guys. Having said that, as previously discussed, it's not a particularly strong draft. At least it's not.
But you make an offer. If you have the money, you make an offer.
Sure, right? Sure. I suspect that it's not going to be anything that you couldn't get on a late round, first round pick, you know, wage scale. Plus, then you're starting your clock for your second contract and you're getting a 3-year minimum guarantee, whatever. But what I think it does help you with, you know, there's so much talk about guards, understandably, and I don't want to get into names because it's really easy to start speculating about whatever. But to kind of wrap this up and just put a bow on this, because we got to spin it forward, but we'll be back from Minneapolis kind of at some point. I know we'll both be there. Will you be there for the duration?
Yes.
Yeah, and I will be too. So, you know, we'll put a bow on this kind of whatever happens, but to kind of wrap things up today, I think the important thing for Indiana, as much as anything, is, you know, Mike Woodson can look at any elite big man in the portal, and there will be elite big men in the portal. Like, there literally was one last year that got Khalil Ware. He can say, this is what I've done with Trayce Jackson-Davis, to a certain extent anyway, different kind of player, but this is what I've done with Malik Renu. This is what I've done for Khalil Ware. Imagine what I can do for you. And there's always going to be an element, you know, I'm with anybody who says Indiana needs to get away from playing these sort of like two big reliant lineups. But you still need a rim protecting presence. You still need a focal point in the post. If you look at, you know, if you look at the, I don't know, like the top 5 teams in the Big Ten this year, the only one that I would argue didn't necessarily have kind of like a big man that could at least be a bit of a fulcrum for them was Illinois. Illinois was a little bit smaller, more interchangeable. But obviously, Purdue has Edie. Nebraska has Rink Mast. Even Northwestern, I know he's not like their most important player, but even Northwestern's got Matthew Nicholson, who can just go do a bunch of scrappy work for them and just, make a nuisance of himself, be difficult to deal with in the post. The point is, you're better with a good big man as long as you surround them with other important pieces. And I think it's going to be really relevant for Mike Woodson, assuming Khalil Ware does leave for the NBA, to be able to look at somebody in the portal. Or, maybe Malik Renu is the internal solution. I think it's hard to imagine him defending the five consistently, but one way or the other, if Woodson does go into the portal for another sort of true or five, then he has a pretty compelling case for whoever that is to say, this is what I'm capable of doing to your game in just a year or 2 years' time, basically.
You like that word fulcrum. We use
I
that one
do
a
like the
lot.
word fulcrum. It's a good word.
That's all I have. That's my analysis on that.
Let's shut it down there for today. Again, the next time we talk, we'll both be in Minneapolis. But he's Mike Nislik. I'm Zach Osner for the Herald Times, for the Indianapolis Star. I'm sorry about my voice. It's beginning to come back. Hopefully, this won't be a problem for much longer. This has been Mind Your Banners for March 11th, 2024. We will talk to you soon.
Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.